You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, October 14th, 2013. My name is Matt Binder.
Michael Brooks.
And this is The Majority Report. It's Matt and Mike Monday, folks. We are broadcasting to you live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building.
In the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Joining us on the program today, Daniel Goleman, the many times best-selling author of such books as Emotional Intelligence. He's going to be talking about his new book, Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence, and also a new column he wrote in the New York Times, Rich People Just Care Less. New research on how systemic inequality is shrinking empathy in a non-virtuous circle. That and a lot more in the program. We'll have an update on the latest in the government shutdown showdown. David Gregory said something incredibly obnoxious and stupid about Medicare and Social Security, showing that empathy gap again, folks.
We have a great story about, well, I guess now a former aide to the Republican Senate candidate running against Cory Booker in New Jersey. It is wonderful. You'll want to see, you want to hear this, I guess. You'll want to hear this.
I was actually literally tearing up. And I was laughing so hard.
Yeah, that's what I mean by wonderful. It is a horrible thing to say.
Oh.
Yes. You know.
Oh, it's horrible.
I think you know our vernacular by now here, folks.
Stunning and unbelievable, just to add those two in as well, obviously.
Also, I will be looking into, I guess, the right-wing blogosphere, you can say, to see how they're looking at this shutdown, looking at these poll numbers saying the Republicans are being blamed for the shutdown, how they're looking at events like the Tea Party rally that happened in D.C. yesterday. It's quite interesting. And
Are they skewed? Numbers?
I would say that it's up to these right-wingers to unskew them.
Oh. Well, we all know how well that worked out for them last time, so looking forward to hearing all about that. And obviously some other things for you as well, folks, and we're going to get to your calls and IMs in the better half of the show. Very excited to talk to Daniel Goleman.
And we'll get to him in just one moment.
Yeah, please.
Tomorrow is the absolute last day you can vote for the Majority Report in the Podcast Awards. Nominate.
Nominate.
The Majority Report. Nominate.
Which you can only do once.
You can only do once, so you're not left behind. I would not hold it off till tomorrow, because you will forget. So do it today, maybe while you're listening to the show.
In news.
It's news / politics, or politics / news, right. Whatever comes first, but that's the category. It's, I believe, third down on the left-hand corner. And you can also nominate us in People's Choice.
Yes.
So news, politics, which to me is the most important, because that's the one that we've won 2 years in a row for, and also throw us in there for People's Choice. It helps us tremendously, like Sam said, not only bring patent trolls to attack us, but it also but it also really does help open up the podcast to a new audience.
And, of course, along with the great Majority Report app that you can download.
And it helps send me to Vegas so I can pick up the award.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll send me to Vegas this year. Put it this way, folks. Bush and Chains nominated us. So if he can do it,
if
I think
Bush
you
and
can
Chains
do
can do it, you can do it,
all
too.
Right. We'll be
so
right
we'll be right back.
With Daniel Goleman.
Thank you.
We are back on the Majority Report. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks, and joining us now is Daniel Goleman. He's the many times best-selling author of books including Emotional Intelligence, and the author of the brand new book, Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence. Daniel, great to have you on the program. How are you? Daniel? Daniel. Hello.
I'm here.
I'm sorry. I don't know what happened there. Did you...
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
I'm here.
Okay.
So anyway, yeah, I'm happy to be here. I hope I am here.
You are here. We are here.
Good. Great, great.
I have no idea what that glitch was about, but I guess that's a factor of modern life, which is a significant factor in your new book, Focus. In this book, you're talking about basically... As more and more research emerges on the importance of the qualities of focus in our lives, in our personal lives, in our professional lives, and obviously we're at a time where as our understanding of the significance of focus is sort of emerging and heightening, we're bombarded by the kind of facts of modern life, which can be very distracting. So I'm just wondering if you could explain that kind of dichotomy and also...
Yeah, that's exactly the reason I decided to write the book now, because I think attention is a mental capacity under siege. Never before have we had so many distractions and distractors built into to where we work. For example, I'm a writer, I work on a computer, and if I want to research something, it's so seductively easy to go to the web and go to what's called Google Scholar. I can see any academic article. But to get there, I have to go through a web page that presents me with every news story of the day, and I'm a news junkie. I'm a journalist. So, you know, before I know it, I'm lost in what's happening in Washington or what's happening in Turkey or Syria, or, you know, it goes on and on. And that's the story of our lives now. The technology is getting in the way of our ability to do what we want when we want. And to connect with people, you know, you go to a restaurant, you see a couple at dinner, and they're both looking at their phones. So it's a different reality. That's why I thought it was so important to write about attention, its varieties, and how to use them well.
What are the varieties of attention and focus?
Well, you know, as I got into the scientific literature on attention and our new understanding because of our ability to image the brain while people are... using different kinds of attention, which shows that they each have different circuits, I realized that there's a lot of varieties. There's, for example, orienting response. There's a new 6-second web site. It's called Vine, and it's gotten enormously popular, but 6 seconds is very short. And what those little segments on Vine are doing is triggering the orienting response, which wants to look at whatever is new and novel. But the orienting response works against our concentrated focus, which is where we get work done, you know, where we think at our best, we remember things at our best, we connect things well, we plan, we make good decisions, we learn new material. It takes sustained focus. And sustained focus, in turn, is under siege by distractions and wandering off and mind wandering. Who needs an app or tech? Our minds are wired to wander off anyway. About 50% of the time our minds are elsewhere, and it turns out that mind wandering is useful if you're trying to come up with some creative solution. That's the time we're going to get the new insight. But when we're trying to get our work done, it's not so useful. So I just felt it was helpful to understand the different kinds of attention, how to use them, when to use them.
So that's really interesting. I want to get into that a little bit more. So there are these two types of attention you're highlighting there. And one is, and I think when we hear the word focus, that's usually where we go. We think of, I'm just going to shut everything else out. I'm going to get done what's right in front of me. I'm going to, you know, finish this article. I'm going to, you know, take this run. I'm going to have this conversation or do this monotonous work, whatever the case may be. And that's one thing. And that's clearly under siege for the reasons you outlined. And then on the other hand, there's this other part of attention that you're talking about where our minds need to wander and be flexible and kind of graze, and that's where creativity emerges from. And it strikes me that even though technologies are so distracting, in some ways, technologies are also distracting us from that kind of open awareness, too.
In fact, they're just general distractors. They're compelling us to pay attention to what they want us to hear and what know and you know and read. So I think we need to make more effort these days to strengthen our attentional flexibility and capacity. And there are ways to do it. I'm now an advocate of teaching kids basically lessons in the mental gym. You know, if you go to the gym and you lift weights, every time you lift a weight, and every repetition strengthens that muscle a bit more. The same is true with the muscle of attention. If you can, I've been in a second grade classroom in Spanish Harlem, really down and out part of Manhattan. The kids there live in the projects next door. But the class is very calm and clear. And the reason is that every day they do this attention strengthener where these are second graders, so they have a little stuffed animal. They find a place to lie down, put it on their tummy, and as their tummy rises, they count 1, 2, 3 on the in-breath, and as it falls, 1, 2, 3 on the out-breath. It's a way of strengthening the muscle of attention.
I'm going to recommend that to Sam. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We can all use it, that's for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, but I think that it's gotten to the point where we need to help our kids get better at it.
Yeah, so that's and it's interesting because it does seem like what your book is highlighting, obviously, that there is this kind of explosion of interest in things like mindfulness meditation, yoga, all of these different ways that people are kind of trying to figure out how to regain some kind of composure and control over the kind of madness of modern life. So I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And mindfulness and all of these methods like yoga reset the body physiologically. So you're actually better able to be calm and clear, which is the optimal state for anything. And, you know, I'm a big advocate of making this kind of skill training available to everybody now.
And that's fascinating. You would say that there's like a real power. This is the kind of cognitive emotional parallel of physical fitness. And that's a good way to think of it.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
That analogy you were saying of using a kind of mental training or mental gymnastics, it makes me think of two things. That one, that in some ways we can start thinking of these things as really, we all kind of understand the need for physical fitness. So maybe we need to kind of have an understanding of like attention and focus fitness. Yeah.
Well, I think it's time for mental fitness. And, you know, there are other kinds of attention that we need today. Some of them come under the framework of emotional intelligence, which I've written about for years. One is self-awareness, being able to tune into what's going on inside us, to sort out our thoughts and our feelings and get in touch with our gut sense of, you know, what's the best thing I can do now, and is what I'm about to do in keeping with my sense of purpose and meaning and ethics. And, you know, self-awareness is a kind of an ethical rudder in our lives, and Lord knows we need that. It also turns out to be key to keeping ourselves calm under stress or being able to recover quickly from getting upset, which is a definition of resilience. Then there's another kind, which I think is also under assault, and that's empathy, being able to tune into other people and sense how they feel, how they see the world, what they may need from us, you know, just old-fashioned concern is based on first noticing people and then empathizing, seeing what's going on in their world. And then if there's something that we can do to help them, being predisposed.
Absolutely. And I think that that's actually been a real theme of your work for a long time, is kind of taking qualities that maybe, you know, people might pejoratively dismiss of as being, you know, quote, soft qualities, and actually saying, no, these are actually vitally important. And that kind of brings us to a recent column you wrote for the New York Times, the New York Times Opinionator, called Rich People Just Care Less. It's pretty provocatively titled. And you started off by saying, you quote these lines that we use in social interactions to kind of describe arrogance or lack of empathy. You say, turning a blind eye, giving someone the cold shoulder, looking down on people, seeing right through them. And then you're basically saying that these metaphors of kind of condescending and dismissive behavior, they're actually being shown in certain research settings to be very real, and a driver in this case, more so perhaps than the technology factor, is people who perceive that they have the kind of upper hand in social power with the other person they're interacting with.
Yeah, the research comes out of the University of California at Berkeley, and it's pretty disturbing. What it shows is that in face-to-face interactions, people who feel they have more social power, whether it's money or status, whatever it may be, actually pay less attention to the other person than that person is paying to them. And empathy is based on paying attention. So what this suggests to me is a kind of empathic tune-out. You know, there's less understanding of the other person's reality, of their experience. And that means there's no room for compassionate action, because you need that empathy in order to go the next step. And, I see this, I think we've all experienced it in one part of our lives or another. I think some of this is going on in Washington, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I mean, would you say, because I think what's interesting that's going on in Washington right now and kind of our modern politics, Dan, is I think that, you know, I think there's radically strong disagreements, and I certainly in this show has pretty kind of strong views about the right policies to approach and the right kind of, ways to tackle big issues. But I think what seems at least distinct to me, and I am a younger guy, I guess, but it seems like this kind of formalization in Washington and in certain strains of politics of saying, really greed is good, or we don't care about, or poor people should be punished, or we should cut food stamps, really, you know, just in this kind of punitive and nasty way. It seems more at the forefront.
Yeah, it's called blaming the victim in psychology circles, and it can only happen if you just don't understand or care about the poor or the disadvantaged. And if you don't care, and if you're elected because you don't care, I think that opens the way to a very perverse trend in politics.
Yeah, and it's also really fascinating, because part of the research that you cited was they were getting, I believe it was a researcher at UC Berkeley and a researcher at Urbana-Champaign in Illinois, that they one of the reasons they were saying that rich people might have less empathy and attunement to others and poor people have more is because a lot of the kind of factors of day-to-day life can be sort of outsourced with money. You don't need to ever ask.
And if you're living on the edge, you need to have a good connection with your neighbors, the one who's going to look after your kids when they come home from school until you get home from work. In other words, what the Berkeley group says is that it may be because poor people need other people more, that they pay more attention and care more. Whatever the reason, the fact is they do. And so they're more attentive upward, they're more attentive laterally, they have stronger social networks. Rich people, as you say, can outsource. You know, you hire a nanny, you hire help. And so it becomes, a kind of monetary relationship rather than a personal emotional one. And that changes the game.
Absolutely. We're talking with Daniel Goleman, author of the new book, Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence. And So getting back to that, obviously we're in a time of really, at least since the 1920s, in fact, really kind of unprecedented wealth inequity. And there's, a big policy and economic debate about that. But I think what you're kind of pointing to here is that there's an emotional and psychological parallel to this problem, and then it's a kind of unvirtuous circle that's feeding each other. So I'm curious, what are the kind of paths to dealing with this very particular crisis in focus?
Well, there's a large body of research that shows that if you have a gap between groups, the biggest healer of that divide is having friends, particularly growing up with friends from the other group. And what that suggests to me is that it would be fantastic if, for example, schools that have a lot of wealthy kids, high-status kids, had them do community projects or brought in kids into that school from, on scholarships and so on from less advantaged. In other words, do whatever you can to encourage meaningful relationships across that divide. I remember once when I was in graduate school, I met a guy very wealthy guy from the Guinness family, you know, the Guinness brewery family.
I know that family's product well. Yeah. Sorry.
You know the product. Yeah. Exactly. I've loved that product.
Yeah.
And he wanted, his aspiration was to work on the assembly line at a Ford plant in the UK and run for Parliament as a Labour representative.
Yeah.
He wanted to be first a union rep and then go into Parliament for Labour. I thought, that is terrific, because he is breaking down the barriers, and we just have to be more conscious about that.
Do you think it also, I mean, and this is another, because I think to me it also introduced a whole other way of framing these policy questions, where we kind of have this, you know, these sort of three frames when we talk about tax policy as an example. So on the one side is, you know, I earned it, I have it, screw you. That's the kind of modern Republican position. Then there's the kind of pragmatic argument that if you tax and you have some way of leveling the playing field, and that creates some kind of meritocratic opportunity. And then you have the argument, which I think is important as well, vitally important, which is that an argument of fairness and ethics and social cohesion. But it seems like what you're pointing to also is that there, this profound inequity has just serious emotional and psychological consequences for everybody. I mean, obviously the people on the bottom end who are struggling, but also people who are really disconnected from their kind of community and broader life.
Yeah, and, you know, the fix I'm suggesting is very long-term, and I think in the short term we need policies that institutionalize caring until we have actual caring. And, you know, because it takes a while to promote that, and until we get there, we've got to ensure that people who are vulnerable in our society are protected.
Absolutely. What do you think... do you see a positive role for social media in all of this in terms of kind of expanding our social networks, or do you think that it's just kind of like a digital representation of what we already are kind of doing in our day-to-day lives anyways in terms of who we're around and what we're exposed to?
Yeah, I think social media are a double-edged sword. On the one hand, excuse me, from the point of view of...
You all right, Dan? Nope, no problem.
From the point of view of attention, there are huge multipliers of what we can know about and pay attention to. You know, Wikipedia, Google, these expand our universe, and so do your friends on Facebook, or your so-called friends on Facebook, because you can know about, you know, people to date, or jobs that are available, or apartments going for rent, quickly through this expanded network. But the downside is that your so-called friends on Facebook aren't necessarily real friends. And you don't want to have a virtual relationship replace your actual connections, because, you know, the times that we're most connected are face-to-face in person, when we have rapport, when we really feel close to someone. And you just don't duplicate that, and you can't replace it on the web.
Absolutely. And a sort of final question, I guess circling back to the beginning, you would recommend techniques like maybe mindfulness meditation, yoga, or what are the, and I know that you have some CDs that have sort of come out along with the book, which people can look at.
I did instructional audio to go along with the book, because I felt it, I'm describing a need, but then what do you do about it? So I didn't want to leave people feeling helpless. The audios are available at a website, More Than Sound, one word, morethansound.net.
Okay.
There's one for adults, there's one for teens, and there's one for kids, because I think the need is universal, and it's great if we can start with kids, but it's not too late if we're adults. So I strongly recommend anyone who wants to strengthen their abilities to focus, to empathize, to care, to go to morethansound.net.
Absolutely.
See what you can get.
Great. Well, Daniel Goleman, it's really just a pleasure and an honor having you on, and I appreciate your time so much. I recommend everybody look, get the CDs and Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence, and really also look at this column, Rich People Just Care Less in the Times. It's fascinating, and I think it kind of offers a lot of context for some of the things we're seeing today.
Thanks so much, Mike. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
Great. Take good care.
Take care.
Bye. Well, there you have it, folks.
Good. That went well.
I think what we're going to do now, we're going to take a brief break, and Matt's going to come over and do a few stories.
Word, that's how we roll.
And that's how we roll. And then you'll take us into the better half, and then I'll pop back.
Sounds good.
And I'm very. You'll want to tune around for the better half to hear this Corey, this guy's comments about Cory Booker's Twitter interactions with a stripper. I love the gap between that conversation on empathy and attention, going back to like, and a great way of focusing your attention in the near future, folks, is the story about Cory Booker's Republican opponent and the stripper.
Well,
yeah.
Before we switch, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
For 10 more minutes, I guess, of the lesser half of
yes.
This makes no sense when we have guests like that. But CredoMobile.com.
CredoMobile.com.
/ Sam. Go there. Get 25% your monthly data for 2 years. They have a contract buyout credit up to $350. Support companies that support progressive campaigns, movements, media. Just do it.
Support companies that have empathy, that are committed to doing the right thing. I mean, God, man, every time I look at Credo, it really is amazing. It's amazing that, like, not only are they doing good, but they're on top of everything. They're on top of, you know, when Glenn Greenwald's partner was stopped at Heathrow, you know, stopped the war on journalism and an open society. They're backing Edward Snowden. They're all over Keystone. They're all over, you know, fighting against a grand bargain. They want to expand Social Security. They're right at the center, right about everything, and you can support that work and have a great cell phone with great service, and obviously also support this show. So we're going to take a brief break, and we will be right back.
All right, we are back. So that was good, Michael.
Thanks, man.
It was a good interview.
I'm really a big admirer of his work and good friends with his son.
All right, so let's get right to this. I honestly thought, from what I was seeing on, I guess, beginning Thursday maybe of last week, that the government shutdown would be over by now.
Really? Optimistic
from man. From what I was reading, it seemed like that poll came out showing Republicans were tanking.
But remember, it goes by district.
Well, anyway.
Crazy in the districts.
I thought that poll and what I was reading and all, you know, everywhere I was reading on, I think I saw it on Salon, saw it on CNN, MSNBC, even Fox News, I think, was talking about it. I thought the shutdown would be over by now. But over the weekend, no progress. And while hopes for a deal to end the government shutdown and avert the U.S. default turned to the Senate on Saturday, as House Republicans said their talks with the White House were effectively over.
Right.
So
they got sidelined.
That's I'm reading from The Hill here, and there's a reason why. Because there's a very interesting – they have an article here about how Boehner reports no progress – and how, you know, many House Republicans emerged from Saturday's party meeting, striking a defiant tone and suggesting they would not simply accept a deal from the Senate. But there's an interesting – they spoke with Virginia Rep. Morgan Griffith, who had some very interesting things to say. The rep says on whether – Boehner will bring up the Senate legislation to the House floor for a vote. That's something the Speaker will have to decide. But if the Senate trying to create a time crunch, that's a time crunch that's damaging to the American people. Now, what's interesting about that is, The Hill continues, Griffith suggested the House should reject an unfavorable agreement from the Senate, even if it resulted in a debt default that severely damaged the economy.
Unbelievable.
We have to make a decision that's right long-term for the United States, says Rep. Morgan Griffith. Which is funny, because just before they were the rep was talking about a time crunch that's damaging to the American people. But Griffith goes on. He says, bringing up the American Revolution. Griffith, a former majority leader of the Virginia House of Delegates, says, I will remind you that this group of renegades that decided that they wanted to break from the crown in 1776 did great damage to the economy of the colonies. They created the greatest nation and the best form of government, but they did damage to the economy in the short run. I mean, this is really what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with people who are living in a fantasy world where they are reliving the American Revolution, where Obama is some sort of king, tyrannical dictatorship, and he's telling us what must be done. Like, I'm shutting down the government. You must all have Obamacare. Blah, 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 blah. I am Obama. And they view this as doing what's right for the American people. They're revolutionaries. This is what needs to be done. We are American patriots and heroes. And this is why we're in the position we are. Because they're delusional. And they believe these fantasies that they've created in their own mind about them being the new American Revolution. It really is amazing. It's stunning. Maybe you could print that next time when your mic is down and I'm not hearing the printer.
It was an emergency.
It was an emergency.
I didn't realize. I thought I had already had it, but it actually got chucked by you, my friend.
All right.
I apologize, though.
All right. That's fine.
I was with you.
That's fine.
It was so good, you didn't even need to.
Do we have time for this? Should we go to the better half?
Well, tell me which one.
The Values Voter Conference.
The little roundup?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got time for that.
All right, let's do this. And then we'll go into the better half. So this past weekend, starting, I believe it was Friday, we mentioned it briefly on the show, was the 2013 Value Voters Summit. It's the biggest religious right-wing conference of the year.
This is like old school. This is like the real original event of craziness that's been going on for a long time.
So anyway, over on America Blog, Right Wing Watch was doing a wrap up of. They were following the whole thing. I don't know how they did it. This thing seems like it's absolutely a dread to and a drag to cover. I mean,
everything right wing watch has to cover.
Yeah.
So
America Blog wrapped up right wing watch's coverage, and I thought I'd pull some of these. There's sound clips, but you know what? This thing is not even worth spending that much time on. But there's some things here that were just so unbelievable that they just need to be mentioned. I'll go briefly go over some of the things that were said by some of the valued voters at the Values Voters Summit. Jim Bob Duggar, who you may all know from the reality TV show, what is it, like 20 Kids and Counting or something
I
like that?
I never heard of that show.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, he went on just to basically compare the U.S. now to Nazi Germany during the Holocaust.
You know, I would appreciate just so much, parenthetically, guys. Like, I've moved past the point of you're going to do terrible, offensive, ludicrous.
Get over the Nazi
Mix
Germany.
It up. Why can't Obama be Mussolini? What, like,
well,
there's
you'll
other
love,
examples.
You'll
there's
love
Franco. There's Stalin. I mean, I guess they use Stalin.
Well, you'll love
know.
Joel Rosenberg.
Mix it up a little bit.
You'll love the End Times guy, Joel Rosenberg, who compared legal abortion in America to Nazi Germany in the Holocaust. Oh, and he also believes God will destroy America. We also have this one is my personal pick. Lila Rose, who's apparently some big religious anti-abortion activist, basically likened Malala, that girl who got shot in the head by the Taliban, advocating for education for girls in Afghanistan.
Telling Obama to his face to stop
drone strikes.
Attacks.
Yeah.
I mean, this girl is like, could not be more amazing.
She was nominated for a Nobel.
Could not be more amazing.
She likened herself to Malala. That's right. Oh. She likened her fight to end women's choice in choosing what to do with their own bodies. She likened that to Malala, basically, actually doing something that is worthwhile, which is advocating for education
well,
for girls.
Well, and I mean, let's just be frank here. Even if you are doing, like, amazing work in the States, and even if, I mean, I think to compare
anything
that
yes.
you would get a 16-year-old girl, you know, or 14
yes.
at the time.
No, 16 now, yeah.
But if
yeah.
she was 14 when she was shot in the head by a Taliban hit squad.
And she hasn't even stopped her. The girl's still out
there. She's
just
going. And I mean, to compare anything just shows how utterly crass, delusional, and tasteless these people are.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Rick Santorum showed up. And he said that the insurance – oh, this actually confused the Values Voters attendees. He likened the insurance mandate for contraception coverage to the French Revolution.
See, I want to give points here.
I could okay. –
Let me give points.
He didn't – he didn't –
Into Nazi Germany.
Nazi Germany.
Thank you. So A for effort.
A for effort.
D yeah. on content.
We have Louis Gohmert, our very own Gomerican. He called for some more hot GOP on GOP action – by calling out John McCain for basically being an ally of Al-Qaeda and calling for revolts in his own party. I love the GOP civil war. It's great. We have Marco Rubio showing up playing the victim card, as these Christian fundamentalist right-wingers love to do, saying how basically there's a rising tide of intolerance in America against Christians, and how Christians, especially conservative Christians, are fighting to remain irrelevant. Oh, 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 poor babies. Oh,
poor babies.
Oh, oh man. We have Senator Ted Cruz showing up, taking some time off from his tour of destroying the country. Yes. Right. Interestingly enough, Ted Cruz spent most of his time being heckled. And Ted Cruz basically said that those hecklers were Obama's paid political operatives.
Naturally.
Can we hear what Obama said to these people, sending them down to the voters' summit, the Value Voters Summit?
All right. Here's what we're going to do. Because we know. Look, Ted Cruz is the only one that understands that raising the debt ceiling is part of implementing Sharia. I don't know how he got the plans, but he got the plans. So here's what we're going to need to do. I'm going to need you to go down to...
I gave it to him, Obama. It's me, Louis Gohmert. The Russians gave it to me, yeah. comrade. And then I went ahead and I forwarded it off to Mr. Ted Cruz.
Well, I like the energy there, Louis, but I don't get the strategy. So what you're going to do is you're going to call John McCain an ally of Al-Qaeda.
Oh, man.
It's so easy. I mean, if we had a right-wing show... We could show up 5 minutes before it started. You don't need to do prep.
Yeah.
You don't need to do anything. I could just do that all day without an Obama impression.
We have Senator Mike Lee, who's become Ted Cruz's lackey. His
bosom buddy.
His bosom buddy. His Robin to Ted Cruz's Batman.
Yes.
He said that the problem is that conservatives haven't been focused enough on school prayer, abortion, and gay marriage. That's the problem. That's why conservatives are losing the war here, folks. People have been clamoring.
Rebranding effort.
Where's the talk on the school prayer, the abortion, the gay marriage? We want... Where is it?
Aces on the rebranding,
this
guys.
This is what's going on. This is why we're losing. And then, of course, to wrap things up, is probably the one you've heard the most. Dr. Ben Carson, who's... actually, apparently, in the medical world, an actual brilliant neurosurgeon.
He actually is. Shockingly enough, he actually is a self-made, grew up in poverty, very successful neurosurgeon.
It's actually true. He basically went out there, and he said Obamacare is the worst thing to happen in America since slavery.
Again, thank you for non-Nazi Germany comparisons. Yeah. I'm going to give it. Well, I guess there's a lot of slavery comparisons.
My favorite thing.
I would just love to see the reaction shots of the white people in the audience. Just like, I said it all along.
My favorite thing.
Yeah.
From the Value Voter Summit. I saw it online on Friday. I came into the office and I told you guys about it and we had a hearty laugh because it was amazing. Apparently, Tim Scott, the Republican senator from, he's from South Carolina, right?
South Carolina.
South Carolina.
African-American.
He's the only African-American in the Senate.
Yes.
And he's a Republican.
And he's a very ultra-right-wing Republican.
He was speaking at the Value Voters Summit. And there was reporters there. And I think this tweet came from a BuzzFeed reporter who was there. Apparently, these Value Voters Summit attendees showed up a little bit late. They walk in where Tim Scott is giving his speech. And they say, oh, look, we didn't miss Ben Carson. Literally, this is how they work. Because to them, all the black people are the same. It doesn't matter.
Oh, values voters.
That's our black guy. It's Ben Carson. Oh, wait, we have two? We have Tim's. We have two black people.
Starting to get uncomfortable. I hope nobody invited Herman Cain this show. I'm getting a little scared.
Getting scared. Oh, man. Two is a crowd. Three is a race riot.
You know what it reminds me of? Do you remember that video? I think Sam did this video a long time ago, and he went, I'm almost positive it was Sam, but all of these like videos of crazy right-wing events like merged together at a certain point. I saw it a long time ago. But I think Sam went to a Glenn Beck rally, and one of the things he got is he showed a photo. Of course, there was like one African-American attendee at the rally, and these two white guys get this black guy to pose for a photo with them, and the black guy is standing in the middle. And they're holding signs. We're on one, and it's set up so that the signs are on each side that's different words, and it ends
so
up.
So he's in the
out.
Middle.
He's the black guy's in the middle. There's arrows pointing at him, and the signs together read, "Do we look racist to you?"
And if I remember correctly, the guy they took the picture with wasn't there for the rally. He was there selling like those political buttons because it's D.C. That's what people.
I don't remember. Even the guy obviously looked. Like mortified.
Grabbed the black guy who they saw walking down the street minding his own business and asked for a photo opportunity so they could pretend they're not racist.
It was pretty stunning.
All right, we will be going into the better half now.
Many great stories, folks. Please become a member.
Become a member. MajorityFM.fm. Go there, right up top. You can become a member. Click on the Amazon link on the sidebar. So you can buy all your stuff through Amazon. You don't pay a dime more. But Amazon gives us a kickback. On top of that, you can subscribe to us at iTunes. Subscribe to us at youtube.com/Sam Seder. Also, the live Majority Report channel, which if you're watching live on YouTube, that's where you are right now, youtube.com/Majority Report Live. There's also other ways you could support us, such as downloading the app. Go right to the site, majorityapp.com. If you have an Android device or an iPhone, boom, you got the app.
Done.
Done.
Listening is a completely different experience. I have people I know, friends, family, they've checked out clips here and there. They love the show, but they could just never get in the habit of listening to it. On it all the time now.
Couldn't it be easier.
That's how the great app way rolls. To introduce new people to the show.
That's how the app rolls. Also, credomobile.com/Sam. You'll be hearing about that more from Sam. But really, you got a great deal. Support a great company that supports progressive values and causes. They'll even buy out your contract. That's great.
What more is there to ask for?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Also, you can support us. Tomorrow is the last day to do this. Nominate us. Podcastawards.com. News/politics. People's Choice. The Majority Report. That's what you write in. And that's all the time we have for you freebie listeners today. We will be going into the better half where we've got tons more. Listen, honestly, become a member today. If for no other reason than to hear Michael talk about this former aide to Steve Lonergan, the guy who's running against Cory Booker for the Senate in New Jersey. It is amazing.
It is absolutely amazing.
It's just unbelievable.
Actually,
it's
I'm not even going to use unbelievable or stunning for this one. I would say just amazing.
It's
like
amazing.
In that, like, the very original sense of awesome.
Also,
just like a awesome event.
Also, I will be deep diving into the right-wing blogosphere and swimming back up,
hopefully,
I guess.
Hopefully you'll get out of
hopefully
there.
Hopefully I'll get back
it's a
up
pretty dark
without
place.
Drowning.
Yeah.
And I'll be bringing you the treasures that are how the right wing in their crazy fantasy world is turning the shutdown and all the protests around it and all the polls that are coming out after it into a positive for the GOP. It is I'll use stunning for this one. All right.
Or to be expected.
You.
We'll be right
see
back.
You in the better half.
In the better half.